Sean, Kayla here. So excited to share the first episode that came out of our trip to Las Vegas. It's a great interview. We hope you enjoy it just as much as we do. Since our trip wasn't recent, though, you might hear a couple of things that clearly happened a while ago. So just ignore it or allow us to transport you back in time, metaphorically, of course, because our TARDIS is in the shop. Okay, enjoy.
3, 2, 1, it's Shazam!
The podcast that hopes to make itself obsolete.
I'm Kayla.
And I'm Carissa, and...
Carissa got nominated by the AMA Magic Castle fun group of people that voted for stage magician or performer of the year. So it happened. So say congrats!
Yay! Kayla.
Hey, Carissa.
How are you? What are you doing?
I'm great, but I'm not as great as you.
Yeah, I'm pretty great. Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. We're in Las Vegas working on the working on our first investigative journalist piece.
Yes.
And so Kayla and I were in a hotel room together this morning, and I opened my phone and I had 4,000 billion alerts. And in my sleepy state, I said, Kayla, I think I might have been nominated for Stage Magician of the Year. And Kayla went, I know, I've already posted about it on Facebook. I went, okay. And so I went back to bed.
Yay.
That was how I found out. I found out through several text messages. Thank you, everybody, for being so supportive.
Yeah,
I am overwhelmed. And let's not talk about it anymore.
In just extra joy is Lindsay Benner is also in that grouping.
I'm so happy. Yep. Yes.
Yes.
Lindsay Benner.
Yep.
And Steve Valentine, friends of the podcast.
He's all right.
What? He's so great.
He's listening. Of course I can't go, oh yeah, let's talk about how all the people are great. No. You're fine.
Okay. That made me feel uncomfortable.
Good.
Steve is like the best. But Steve is a friend of the podcast. Lindsay was on an episode.
Right.
And the other two guys are lovely. But we don't care about them as
no.
much.
No.
You can.
Nailed it.
Awesome.
Support.
So happy. Okay. Today we have a wonderful guest.
I'm fine. Thank you for asking.
Oh, shit. Hey, Kayla. Didn't I ask you first?
Yeah, but it was just too exciting. I have nothing to say. What do you want me to say? Hey, we're in Vegas. This morning, I woke up to find out you were nominated for an award. Wow, what a day. I just scratched you.
I feel like I would normally think that you scratched me by accident, but I think it was actually a passive-aggressive thing because you're like, how dare you get nominated?
That's really how I feel.
Yeah, that's...
What I want so terribly is for a group of magicians to love me.
We have a guest. Now can I
what?
See? I'm just excited.
Yeah, we'll get into it.
Okay.
Enough of this whatever we're doing.
Yep.
Okay.
Hey, Kayla.
Hey, Carissa.
Do you know that today's guest was actually on Penn & Teller's Fool Us on TV in their second American season?
Oh, wow. But did you know that our guest was named by Esquire magazine as one of Las Vegas's 45 under 45?
That's crazy. Did you know our guest has been running a show in Las Vegas for 9 years that he self-produced at the Four Queens Hotel and Casino?
No. Did you know that our guest is about to start touring with Criss Angel starting at the end of May?
That is very exciting. I'm hoping that's a lot of money. Did you know that our guest starred in such reality TV shows as Buried Treasure and Bad Ink?
I love those shows.
They're great shows.
Very.
We don't never see those shows.
no, but my parents have.
Yeah.
Because they are in their late 70s and live in the middle of Connecticut. And that is a fun fact about our guest. You know what, Chris? I think we... should also mention that our guest is 2-time alligator wrestling champion.
That is true. Yes. Yes.
You know what? Let's just get hammered.
Let's get hammered. Everyone, welcome Mike Hammer.
Woo! Yay.
Hey, Mike.
That was quite an intro.
You sound thrilled.
And, well, I'm just bringing in the alligators right now.
Guess we're going to do it here in our hotel room at the Luxor in Las Vegas.
Very nice. Congratulations, by the way, Carissa. And sorry, Kayla didn't win anything, but... But congratulations on your AMA award.
Thank you. I really did not enjoy when you brought it up in your show, which we saw tonight.
I had to bring. Well, you didn't enjoy that I acknowledged you.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. It's funny because Kayla and I are sitting next to each other, and Mike goes, "Oh, there aren't a lot of women magicians." And we both sunk into our chair, and then
you're like, "Here it comes."
And then you started talking about the Magic Castle, and Kayla got all relaxed again. I'm like, "God damn it, it's just me."
Yeah, and then I asked that guy. I said, because we had a guy from Austria in the show, and I asked him, I said, for those that don't know what the Magic Castle is, and he goes, oh, it's equivalent to, and he said some weird thing.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I go, well, actually, it has nothing to do with that.
Yeah, but he's like, it's like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Really fascinating. I also, did you get a chance to talk to him afterwards?
Because
I he had mentioned it in the show.
He was a doctor for, he was a veterinarian.
For Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah, for Siegfried and Roy.
For the Tigers, not
for the Tigers, which is
Siegfried
really...
and Roy.
Yeah. Well,
you never know.
Yeah, probably wasn't
learned
his fault.
Learned a lot today.
Okay, so...
probably wasn't his fault.
Probably wasn't his fault. I don't think he did anything.
All of this is not being cut.
Let's
keep going.
Jeez, I don't think... Okay.
So, we're gonna let's start with the most annoying question in Magic.
Yes.
How'd you get started?
Oh boy, it is annoying, isn't it? I was just, I got a, it's probably like everyone else, I got that magic kit when I was a kid, and it had the, remember the ball in the vase? Yeah. And the ball looked so stupid, it didn't look real, because it was the cheap version that came with, you know, 20 other tricks. And people are like, no, but it looks real to someone that doesn't know magic. So you could perform it, and someone's like, that's plastic. I'm like, it's fake, you know. But it was that, started with a kit, you know, little magic kit, but later on, though, I got into card tricks, which were really great. Royal Road to Card Magic was like my first book. Yeah, we had books back then, ladies.
That's like a serious book, too.
Yeah, it was a serious book.
That's a hard book.
It was.
Hard book? Is it not? Was it not like on a Kindle?
No, exactly.
Let's explain what a book is.
It was a production book, actually.
Don't know what you speak. I've never heard of this. What is this?
But it was a great book, though. And it was, you know, and it was hard. It's funny, though, because at the time, we didn't have a lot of videos. We weren't really watching from videos. It was a lot of reading. But so I like kind of books because you have to, there was no one to mimic. So you had to like create your own way of performing, which is kind of a catch-22. Because when you see someone perform, sometimes you pick up their style, which isn't good when you're a little kid. You can't, you know, you're walking around like David Blaine, you know, as a 12-year-old doing his. But as opposed to just coming up with your own personality by reading. But the advantage is that when you see someone perform something, you know what it should look like. Versus you think you're doing it right out of a book and it's like, this looks terrible, but no one tells you because they're like, oh, yeah, that's great, Mike. You got my card, you know, so. What was your question?
That's the theme of the day.
Why does everyone...
Everybody keeps asking.
Are we not asking questions?
Are we speaking? Is this English?
This is actually, like, multiple times today we've been asked.
Oh, that's funny.
What was the question?
Yeah, Snake Babe was doing this. Because
we drift off.
Yeah, Snake Babe was like, what was the question? Like 12 times during her chat today.
Right? Oh, Maria, they're great.
Yeah. So how long, you basically been doing magic since you were a kid. Was this always your job?
Yeah, I didn't really have a real job. I think one time in like, it was high school and I took some kind of a work release program. Not a work release, but it was like actual work, not a work release. It was a work program, I guess. So you can second half of the day you go get a job, and I was a plumber's assistant, and I'm like, oh, this is a good trade to learn, and it sucked. Oh my God, they had me just digging ditches, like little crevices, you know. I'm like, this is not plumbing. They're like, well, we have to get to the pipes, and I'm like, no, you guys are abusing me, making me do this child labor laws, you know, breaking child labor laws here. But so it sucked, and I didn't learn much about plumbing, but. But it was good.
But you learned a lot about magic.
I learned a lot about magic.
And a lot about you.
Yeah.
That
I hate plumbing, right?
Plumbing.
Oh, it was terrible. But yeah. But I haven't had, like, as far as real job, but no, I mean, this was it. I did a lot of family shows, kids' parties a lot of times when I was younger. And those were hard. I give people credit. I've been at my show for almost 9 years, and it's a stage show, but I give people credit because that was hard work. You know, going from one kid's party to another kid's party, dealing with these monsters, you know. So it was hard. I thought it was challenging. And I'm from Chicago, so you'd be outside in warm weather. And I blew up balloon animals for the kids, or I blew up balloons and twisted them into animals, you know, as a kid. And so I'd make them for the kids. But when you're outside, they're hitting them on the grass breaks the balloon, they keep wanting more balloons. You need to make me another one, you know, and it's... So it was frustrating. It was tiring, you know. So that was harder than anything I do now, I think.
Oh, yeah. So how long did you do kids' shows and that kind of thing before you got into this show?
God, I was doing that for years because I did the kids' shows and then turned into sort of family shows because the families would, they thought it was funny because my style, if you haven't seen it, I pick on the audience pretty good. You know, I rip on them pretty good. But I did this even with kids. I would make fun of the kids really bad. And so I would be, like, say at a house party, and the kids, they parents would make the kids take their shoes off. You know, because you're Chicago weather, you know, it goes, there's always some crap on the ground they're stepping in. So they'd come in the house and I would say, oh, kids, why don't everyone put their shoes on? And then we'll start the show. So the kids would listen. The parents would be looking at me like, what are you doing? And it's just funny. They're tracking dirt through the house. And I did that. And then later on, I wound up doing a lot of restaurant work. I got some work in some restaurants, some different pizza parlors. And then there was actually a restaurant later on in my life. Eugene Berger used to work at. But then he moved on to another, the late Eugene Berger. He was amazing. But he moved on to, I think he started traveling more or something like that. So he left the restaurant. And I ended up taking over the restaurant he was in. But that got me a lot of corporate work. From that, so I wound up doing corporate work, and then I traveled and toured and did colleges for about 10 years.
Whoa! Yeah, you did 10 years of college.
Oh my God,
shows?
They're brutal. Yeah, whoa. The road is brutal, and this is like now. I think, I mean, travel's worse now than it was then, just because now they have more security check than they used to. This is, you know, I did this a long time ago, and the security was a little bit lax. I mean, I do a razor blade swallowing bit, and I would get my razor blade sometimes in my carry-on, you know, just walking on the plane with it. And so I did that. We're actually working. You're not going to believe this, you young people, but we didn't have GPS on our phones, you know, nothing that was prevalent where it would work. So we'd be looking at maps to find our way around, and I'd be driving through these fields and looking for freaking maps, and there'd be a snowstorm, a sign would get covered, I'd be in like upstate New York and I'd be completely lost, and I'd be driving for like an hour, and I didn't even know if I passed my destination or not, because there'd be a blizzard. It was just crazy. So yeah, that was hard. The travel was hard, but the colleges, they were kind of fun. I think nowadays, though, people get a little bit, well, I don't have to tell you, you know, they're a lot harder. They're a little PC, and I'm not. So I don't know how well I would do at college these days.
Yeah, which is why I think Vegas is a good home for a show like yours.
PC, though, you could tell. I mean, they're a little bit, and I'm not at all, but I have to even kind of watch what we've talked about it. You have to watch the way you present things. But I think I get away with a lot because I think they know it's sort of tongue-in-cheek. They, you know, I have a certain style where I could get away with saying something which would normally be rude, but they find it funny, like they're not offended by it.
Well, your marketing is quite clear. Like if you've never heard of you or the show before and they see it, it's, oh, okay, I think I have a decent concept of what this show is going to be. You're in Las Vegas. You're on Fremont Street.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't going to be, you know, Sugar Plums and Fairies.
No. Yeah.
So I think you do a really good job of setting up the expectation for the audience, yeah. Which is really great. So how long ago did you move to Las Vegas?
I've been in Vegas for 16 years, about 16 years, but I've been in the room about 9 years. I used to do a team show, Comedy Magic Team, with a guy, it's called Spike and Hammer. And it was a guy, Rob Weinstock, who actually plays at the Castle. He does some close-up room. I haven't gone to see him, but he does a lot of close-up magic. And but we did that show for about 10 years. That's another 10 years. We also did some colleges and stuff. But then just for some personal reasons, not even like bad, we're still really good friends. But I wound up doing the solo show, and he went off and did his own thing. But it was funny because it was a team show, and I played the straight man, and he was the funny guy. And like for me to play the straight guy, it's like, you know. And straight man in comedy teams means the guy that does the setup and the punch. It's not straight versus gay, but you know. But I was always good with timing. So I guess that's why that became me, and I'm the setup guy. But that straight man usually doesn't deliver the humor, the joke. It's the setup for the joke, and the punch is by the funny guy. So, you know, it worked for a while, but I think you can tell I like to do the jokes. So
yeah, well, and I think it's much harder to improvise in that sort of a dynamic because everything
absolutely.
Is
it's so
based on stuff.
Yeah, it's so regimented. Did you ever do a team show? Have you guys done work? Yeah,
I did. One of the first street show I toured was a duo, and it was that's.
It's hard. It's hard. There's a lot of give and take, and you have to. And sometimes, even though like someone's saying something you don't want them to say, you have to roll with it. You can't tell the audience that was stupid. Now we did have that chemistry where I was the person that would, you know, tell the other guy he's the idiot, and he wouldn't know he's the idiot because he's playing the dumb guy. So it was kind of fun, but you know, it's challenging. It really is. It is hard. And we talked about street magic. When I first started my show, I had to go outside and try and lure people into the room by doing street magic. And boy, it's not easy. I could do close-up magic, and I can do a stage show, but that combination of it's just different. And the problem with the challenge that I had is if I would do street magic where they loved it, you know, where they loved it, and they came up to me, well, now they don't need to see the show. Because they're like, oh, okay, yeah, you're great. Well, now we're going to go on to so-and-so. We've already seen you. So it was really hard to get people in the room back in the day. I couldn't, like, give my tickets away. I'd have, like, 10 people in the room. And it was hard. It was really, really challenging. But, you know, I stuck with it for so long, and I've got a pretty good reputation by now somehow.
Yeah, I mean, both of the times I've seen your show, the room has been packed.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate. I mean, I get a lot of repeat business because I do improvise quite a bit. So even though the core magic is very similar, you know, sometimes I'll throw something else in, but it lends itself to a lot of improvisation with the people. Like, really, no two shows are the same because of the way I play off the crowd. And I actually, you know, in our business, obviously, we've got some situations that occur quite a bit, so we can play it off like we improvise it. But I also do wind up improvising a lot because there's so many moments that, like today, we got that doctor, veterinarian doctor from Austria. It's like, you know, and he's talking about a horse. A famous horse, nonetheless, you know. So, you know, you never know where it'll take you. But I genuinely, like, I do listen. I think that's the whole key with improvising. You have to sort of listen to people and see what they're saying. Well, we had the guy up front, though, that was just, rah, 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 rah. I didn't even understand him half the time. So I would just cut him off, which was actually funny anyway. I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on was because early on when I came to see your show, well, when we started doing the podcast, yeah, Biz insisted I go see you.
Yeah.
Partially because you have probably the closest to what Amazing Jonathan was doing.
Yeah.
We have this very, like, aggressive style, sort of insult, comic-y kind of thing.
What do you
thing.
Mean? You
know? What is going on? Yeah. You know, and this is a style that you would think right now in this culture you could not get away with.
Right.
And so for me, getting a chance to see it, especially for the first time, and now seeing it for the second time and seeing how much was actually different, because, you know, you made I could see some of the calls that you made, because the show that I saw last time was people were much more up for it.
Yeah.
So you got to do way more.
Yeah.
So in this time, as things are shifting, the choices you make to make sure that that show plays and doesn't get you in trouble and also, like, serves the room, because you don't want to lose the room and make people uncomfortable.
Right.
It has to be so precise.
Yeah. It's a tough call. And just kind of like to rephrase, because I remember the last time after the show, so I do this you know, old version of the, it's kind of, I think it was based off originally like a spirit tie, basically, with the hoop. It was actually, this version was off of Falcon and Willard, is that his name? Yeah. And you know, someone gets in a hoop, and I put a girl in the hoop, and basically I'm tied up, and, you know, so she's wearing a jacket. We switch places, but at the end I have my pants down. And I remember after the show, the first thing Carissa says to me, before she tells me it's the worst show she's ever seen. Oh, no, that was this time. Yep. Yeah. So she says, I got to ask you, do you ever have a problem with this day and age with the, you know, Me Too movement and whatnot, with putting a girl inside there? But, and I think you could see now, though, that, like, tonight I couldn't play it off the same way as last time when you came. You do have to read the crowd. And today we had some older folks in there, and it just wasn't, you know, I couldn't play it the same way sometimes I do, but I still very, I could play it off funny. I just can't be as, I put more of the attention on the guy this time than I did the girl, and sometimes you could just pick on the girl more. But because that's such an odd thing to do, you know, with your pants down afterward and whatnot, it's like, I do have to get a vibe for the room, feel for the room. And you saw me. You even called. You know, I looked at her husband, and I said, well, he's smiling. That's a good thing. Well, that cues the audience. Okay, they're fine with it. We'll move on, you know. But there were some lines I didn't do because I felt like I just didn't feel it tonight. If you don't feel it, don't try it. You can't, you know, if you can't commit to a line or a moment and you're going to second guess it, don't go there. I have, you know, sometimes before, and it's gone kind of not great. I have the ability to get out of it, but why do you want to go there? Because you still have moments where it's like, ah, he's a dick. You know what I mean? So you don't want that too much. So I do ride that fine line, but at the same time, I sort of know what I'm doing a little bit. But you never know. You can make a wrong call. I've had it happen. And but I don't want to end the show that way. You know what I'm saying? At the end, if you don't feel it's like, you know, I'm going to be careful a little bit. So
can you walk us through how – let's just start with just the rope tie escape with the jacket. Can you walk us through your inner monologue of like, all right, how do I pick this audience volunteer? How do I make sure she feels safe, her family feels safe, the audience knows that they're safe? Like, how are you – what are you thinking in all of those moments?
To put some – for that one, just super hot. Just any chick that's super hot. That's it.
Right.
That's it.
Great.
But since I didn't get that tonight, I actually look for – people would think that. They'd think I would pick the hottest girl or something, try to. But the truth is I look for someone that's kind of been smiling a little bit, first of all, you know, through the audience. And not someone too overly obnoxious, because that particular thing, I have to have them work with me a little bit. I mean, they're not in on it, but I can't – I'm putting a jacket on them and, you know, and I have to somehow get this jacket and – I don't need them fighting me either, you know? So I usually look for someone kind of fun, and I look for someone that's with a guy, you know, preferably maybe a husband, someone that he's already sick of her. No, I'm just kidding. No, but I look for a couple, more or less. And you can't always pick someone, though, that's with a guy that's like a boyfriend. If they look like they – because sometimes guys get jealous. They're very strange, you know, because I play some jokes like – so I put on that song, that sexy song by Marvin Gaye, Let's Get It On. But, you know, because I know that, I want some people that'll be fun. But if you get a boyfriend, you never know. You know, I'm not looking to make someone jealous.
For me, at least, like, I was watching that moment really carefully because of you had explained it to me, Chris.
The lawsuit. I got it.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to see what we're
doing. Are you in on this lawsuit, too? Is this a class action if there's just two of you suing?
Yes.
What you do, we don't actually have a podcast.
This is a
definition. We're just getting evidence. Welcome.
This is my interrogation.
Yep. She.
Wouldn't that be crazy if this was
like a setup?
Yeah.
It would be so elaborate.
Entrapment.
So in that moment,
yeah.
When the music started playing,
yeah.
I've seen a couple of magicians use that exact song.
Oh wow!
With some like weird sexy dance with their female volunteer.
Yeah. And I don't.
Right. Yeah. And what I did notice you do is you didn't even look at her to
no,
start.
I looked
you
at the guy.
Yep. And then
and
I
looked
out.
Because I'm not trying to make her uncomfortable. Now, some girls I can look at with the song, but I didn't feel it with her. She looked a little shy. Didn't she seem a little bit? So I didn't really want to overdo it with her. She did laugh, though, when I gave her the handkerchief and I told her to smell it. It smells like chloroform. She liked that part. So, which, that's just creepy. Now that I think about it, I'm like, yeah, that was – and you know what was weird about that? Because I do have that line where I smell it. It smells like chloroform. When the Cosby thing came out, the whole Cosby thing, I'm like, oh, is this line gone now, too? You know, every time something hits the news, I'm like, what do I have to watch for now? But – by that time in the show, I'm pretty good. As long as I don't offend her, everyone's going to be with me, and it's good. And plus, I do put shorts on over my other underwear, so nothing's coming out. You know, it's like I'm pretty cautious. You know, I'm smart. But let's talk about that situation, because there's those guys that do that appearing bra from the girl. Now, I do have a bra in this trick, but I don't. You know, where they tuck the handkerchiefs in the old thing and they're tucking it, for those that don't know, well, most
definitely
of you guys
bra.
Magicians know.
Yep.
Yeah, you're tucking the handkerchief inside their top and then pulling on it's a bra. You don't do that to a woman, not these days, right? You cannot do that to a girl.
Yeah. So in your narrative, the other thing I really noticed is because, yeah, so I don't want to give away your act too much because it's the finale of your show, but you do end up with a bra.
Oh, I don't really care.
You don't really care? You do end up with a bra.
Only 20,000 downloads. 21. And was that your funny bone?
Yeah, okay. I hurt myself.
Well, this interview is over.
This interview is over.
So you, at one point in your routine, you end up with you know, a bra around your neck. And when we talked about this before, it is not a sexy bra. Mm-hmm. It is just a, you know, basically the flip.
It's my grandmother's.
It looks like, you know, an old lady would wear it, and which is very important, right? Because it's not sexualized. It's sort of like, it's a more of a poop joke in that way. It's not erotic.
Yeah.
And then you immediately move away from her and you look at her and go, what did you do? And immediately in that line is so precise and it has so much interesting power in it.
Yeah.
Because when you ask her what she did, it immediately tells us you didn't do anything. It immediately tells us she has the power in the situation. If anything happened, she did it. And then if you watch her face and if she doesn't react, if she doesn't own that moment, you go, actually, it's the guy.
I did that today.
Yeah.
I did that today. I put it on the guy. I go, it's not me. I go, it's not. Yeah, it's his. You know, it's whatever his name was. And I said, it's his. I don't always throw that in. You caught that. I don't think the last time I had to do it that way. But I'm reading the people. I don't. You know what? For someone that would hear about my act and think, oh, my God, he's so rude. Like he's. But I think what live you do see, sure, I'll go there. But you can see that I care about the people. Like, I mean, I hope that translates. Like, I think they could see where it's not being mean. I mean, we had that lady up front whose birthday was that not older, but, you know, yeah. And I was picking on her pretty good, but she was laughing the whole time, you know. She was a really good sport. And you can usually pick on someone when they're a little bit older because they're not really so worried about, you know, PC necessarily. And if you notice, though, I do let her dish things out to me a little bit, too. And she was so talkative. Like, I'm like, okay, shut up, lady. You know what I mean? She was talking, too. So it was fun in that way. So, but I always hope the audience gets that. I'm just trying to have fun with them. And you never know, though. But, yeah.
Well, one of the other things we talked about was that you basically start with two volunteers at the beginning of your show. You have them facing outwards so that the audience can see their faces. And those are going to be the two people you primarily pick on throughout the show. So we've already, the audience very much off the bat has seen you pick on two people and we've seen them have fun. So we've been conditioned for the show to see what, like your opening routine you do with the handcuffs sets up basically the expectations for the rest of the show.
Yeah, very low expectations.
This is an edgy show. You're going to pick on people and it's a little going to push the boundaries.
Yeah.
I think if you came out and did an allusion to music, or if you came out and did a Dove act.
Or
a
book production. I mean, yes. I know.
It's tough because people are coming in, you know, trying to get information, trying to look and go, what should I expect? And immediately right off the top of your show, we know what to expect.
And I used to come out there a mile a minute. But the problem I noticed is, like, sometimes when you come out too quickly, people are kind of, like, they back off a little bit. You know, they're like, oh, my God, okay, whoa, you know, this is too much for me. And I have to include people in the show. I have a lot of volunteers, so they don't really volunteer, of course. I pick them all. But I have to make sure that I'm not too frightening to them, that they don't want to come up. And one of the things that I think I do it wrong. Well, it's a catch-22, but the vacuum routine, that's pretty invasive where I bring a guy up on stage and, you know, I proceed to do this thing supposedly looking like a vacuum is being shoved down his mouth. But the problem is you do that. Who the hell wants to help you after that? Nobody. So, and it's up pretty quick in the top of the show. But also the reason I do it there is because it's so different kind of. Like, I'm like, it gives them a chance to see this is kind of different. And I make sure it's with a guy. You know, obviously, you're not going to do that to a woman. That would be a little bit weird.
At the end of the show, you know, you thank a lot of people. All the people that helped you in the show, you thank them by name. It's wonderful.
That's so impressive.
Yeah.
Was I right on any of them? Or?
You were right on almost all of them. And then Pam was like, me?
Yeah, that was funny. I didn't even remember who Pam was, which one. She was our first one, right?
Yeah
that's so great. Funny.
She was so great.
I don't remember breakfast. Like, I was really impressed. That was cool.
Yeah, what did we...
Why
did
do
we
do that?
You know what? I think it makes them feel good, to be honest with you, with the names. What's interesting, though, here's the downfall. I do remember, like, names, everyone during the show, except Pam, and which is funny because she was up front. That was the weirdest thing. But what's funny is I'll see people in the hallway, and they're like, hey, Mike, we loved your show. And I'm like, hey. And that's it. Like, I don't say their name because I'm like, I get one day mixed up from another. You know, I have to try and erase it because otherwise everyone that's sitting in the front will be Pam from that point on, you know. So I have a good memory, like, for the show, that where I wanted to. The people that work for me will tell you that I remember every single thing. But I do try and forget the names from day to day because it's going to get monotonous otherwise. It's like, but it's funny. I'll see people in the hallway once in a while and they'll be like, hey, Mike. And I don't know. Did they know me from the show? Did they just know I do a show here? Or do I really know them and I forgot who they are? You know, that's so awkward. So you never know, you know, because out of context, it's weird, you know. If I knew they saw the show, okay, kind of place it that way. So I love that. Hey, you are great. No.
Yeah.
So
when we see as an audience, you kind of remember everybody and think everybody in the show. Yeah. I think it lets us know as an audience that we're not props. You know, the people, the volunteers on the stage were co-stars and were helping and were being respected. And it's just that constant reminder, like, people aren't props. In this recent episode that came out, Kayla and I talk about, you know, this sort of test that we have for volunteers on stage. Like, are they just a table? Is basically their job to hold something? So much of magic is just people being tables. So much of magic is people being props.
It's much easier to have a table that can fit in your carry-on.
Then you're like, you don't have to talk this. To it. You don't have to remember its name.
Yeah.
So,
but it's, exactly. And that's true. I'm trying to put some things where I've got a couple more solo bits where I don't have to drag them up, but I could still work with them from the audience. So I think like I did the book test with that girl, and I think I said, you're not going to have to come up on stage. And I think they're relieved when I say that, like, oh, good. I go, yeah, just stand here, you know. And the only reason I do it that way, I felt like with her in the audience, now the audience feels she's part of them, as opposed to on stage where they can separate from her, sort of, you know, in their head. And because it's so hard to engage an entire audience when you're just doing, you know, like a book test. That's why I do that thing at the beginning. Everybody think of the first letter, even though I'm doing a joke of it anyway, you know, but I try and include as many people as I can. I think my show, though, is really funny in the way sometimes people really want to help and sometimes they are just looking away when you walk down. No, you know, and then you have trouble finding people. So today was harder to find the right people. Did you notice I asked someone about something? Do you have a phone? No.
Yeah.
Do you have a phone? No. And then I go to the other one. You have a phone and you know it. Come here. You know, I'm like, okay, we're done with this routine. And she was fun, the girl that I did pick.
Yeah, she ended up being great.
Yeah.
But it was nice to hear you, like, you got a no and you accepted that no.
Yeah.
You know, we see performers all the time who get a no and they're like, oh, well, I'm losing. They think that loses them some power in the eyes of the audience. But if somebody says no, you continue to push them.
Well, did you notice something? I did something kind of clever because I didn't ask if they wanted to help me. I asked if they had a phone. So to them, I'm smart enough to know what they're doing. If they say they don't have a phone, now I just need someone with I'm just trying to chase down the phone. Clearly she had a phone. Everybody has a freaking phone, you know? So I do it that way because in my show, if I ask if they'd like to help right off the bat, and if they say no, everybody's going to start saying no. Well, maybe not everybody, but you follow what I'm saying. So I sort of gave the out that way until the one lady, I think I said, you know, the one that I asked if she can walk.
Oh, that's so great. What a great line.
Yeah. And she was she older? Yeah, she was, right?
Yep. She shuffled. She was like, I can walk. And then she got up and shuffled. And you're like, that's walking?
Oh, I did say that? Oh, my God.
It was so great. It was so funny.
I think if I went back and listened to what I said later, didn't I say I thought you said you could walk?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's super good.
It's great.
I think if I went back and actually heard myself,
yeah,
I'd be like, what the hell's wrong with him?
Also, a lot of the time we see you walk up to somebody in the audience because you spend a lot of time in the audience kind of making eye contact and trying to get nonverbal yeses. I've seen that a lot.
Yeah.
So you look at someone, you have a conversation, you know, what's your name? That's a little yes. You know, what do? You get all these like little yeses before you command them to come up on stage because there are a couple of times you go, join me.
Yeah.
But you don't physically pull them. If they say no, you take the no.
Right.
And you've already, you know, they're smiling at you, they're answering all your questions. You can pretty much assume you've got a yes there.
Yeah. And I walk through and I'm like, no, no, I'm saying no to them so that when it's the yes, now it's like, but you won. You're the one. And I don't know if you noticed, even when you were in the audience, in your head, you're probably like, I don't really need to be up there. I don't think he's going to pick me. But I walked by. I said, oh, good to see you. So I just let your guard down. The worst as an entertainer is being picked for another entertainer's show. Like, it's the worst. It's like, because do we go with it? What do they want us to do? Should we let them know? I mean, I knew you guys knew. I knew who you were. But it's the most awkward feeling because you don't want to be in another entertainer's show. Like that, because we're not going to act the same.
Yeah.
Or
we're going to look like a plant.
Yeah, we're going to look fake because we're professionals being up there. And it's like, you know.
And you spend all your time going, is this a card force? Do I take the force card? Are they deliberately force? What would a person do?
You don't even need to force me. I'll just tell you it's whatever you want it to be. Yes.
Just hand me a card. I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah,
that is my signature.
Yeah, I hate it. Plus, also, I think most performers go, you know, I'm up on stage all the time. I don't want to. Don't. Please don't.
Right.
Please don't.
Right.
I don't want to be on stage.
How do you choose the type of quickly person? Thank you so much for being here.
And Jeff, cut. Jeff,
time out. Time in. How do you choose?
I will not get dismissed in my own podcast.
Feminism.
Oh, no.
What podcast is this?
I don't remember. We've been in Vegas too long.
How do I choose?
We've been here for 24 hours.
I'm so tired.
How do you choose the type of person to come up for each routine? So age, gender, the group of people they're with, like, is it a group of women or are they there with their spouse or whatever?
I have different people for different things. Like the thing I do with the newspaper, I usually go for an older lady because I know I can kind of move her around. I could do what I need. They don't normally, sometimes you get a younger person up there and they start talking to you. And I do that routine silently. So they're talking to you and you're like, shut the hell up. But you can't say it because you're talking. Where an older person just, they're usually pretty good. They just kind of roll with it. Plus, I could pull like certain little things on them that they don't see coming. So it's kind of fun. So usually that older, the thing I do with the vacuum, because it's invasive, I want a guy that looks like your average Midwest, you know, just Joe Schmo guy, just because he's going to roll with. That guy was great today, by the way. That guy was great. Just so they roll with it, and because it's kind of invasive, and he was really fun, you know. And like, I never pick a young stud looking guy for that, because who's going to let me do that, what I do to them? They're not going to let me do something as invasive as that. You know what I mean? They're not going to let me. They're too cool. You know what I'm saying? Like, so. And then, you know, the ending, of course, I pick a semi-attractive girl, you know, but there's something different for everyone, to be honest with you. The mind reading, the book test I do, I always look for a woman, and for two reasons. First of all, I think women somehow follow instructions better than guys do. And also I'm kind of flirty with them a little bit about the, you know, send it to me. It just would be weird if I said it to a guy. I don't want to make the guy uncomfortable. I mean, I'll play the act up. I don't care. You know, I'll do anything to any guy. I'll say anything. You know, I've said some funny things to a guy where I've gone in the audience and I'll start hugging the guy, you know, and rubbing his hair. And, you know, it's funny, you know, usually an old guy, you never mess with a young guy's hair. They get pissed. But but so I pick a girl because I'm kind of a little bit, you know, where you're going to read their mind. So I play, do you feel the connection? You know, that kind of thing. So, you know, that I usually go for a woman. And then I do a thing with the bags and the hammer. But I want a girl for that. That girl was strong, though, because at the end I have to take the hammer and I have him smash a bag. She's this little Filipino girl. She's probably all of maybe 5 feet tall, maybe. And I had her smash one of the bags. She hit it hard. Like, she's an aggressive little thing, you know, where guys, I usually, you know, guys get overly too cool. Like, it's one of those games at the carnival. Like, how hard can I ring the bell? You know, it's like, geez. So, it's a little different, but I found those certain things work for me. And that's where I go with the age and whatnot. But then the other thing about picking a specific person, you have to kind of get someone who looks like they're smiling, not too intimidated. And then there's some people that you don't want to, you don't want someone overly obnoxious either, because sometimes they're just, is that your question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're reading each other's mind.
Yeah. Well, the problem with overly obnoxious, honestly, I don't mind. It doesn't bother me, but it's not normally fun for the audience, because what happens is if someone's overly obnoxious on stage where they're trying to, hey, whatever, the audience gets turned off by them. And then I'm stuck with that person for the next couple of minutes. So, you know.
Do you feel like any...
Yes.
Thank you for being here. Shazam. Time out.
I keep doing that to you.
It's great.
I love it. I love
this
you.
This is the bit. We found our bit. Yeah, we found our... Improv. Yes, and...
Shazam. That is so funny.
The new host of Shazam, Mike Hammer.
I gotta be honest with you two. You two are both very dry, sarcastic people yourself, so it actually works really well. Like, I didn't really know. I'm like, oh great, I got these two feminists coming in to shut down my show. And then I walk outside and Carissa, that was the worst show I've ever seen.
You're the worst.
And I'm like, yeah, you're the worst. Kayla, what was your question about something?
What was the question?
Oh, do I lose it now?
No. We have a document. you've called up a person. They've said yes to coming up on stage, and something happens where suddenly they become uncomfortable.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Too bad. They suffer. No. It depends how far into it I am. I mean, normally they're probably not going to come up if they're that uncomfortable. I did have a guy once or twice with, like, okay, 20 times, but with the vacuum where I'm like, yeah, this guy is just not going to let me do it. So I kind of let them off the hook, but I can sense it before I'm deep into the routine. So basically I go, well, you're a blast. See ya. and they're happy to leave. You know, you try not to get too far into it. Well, I have had at the ending, sometimes if I read that the girl I'm about to pick up for the end, for example, because that's the only risky thing, you know, for as far as myself and a girl. If I pick someone and I don't think they're right, I'll just still leave them. I'll still pull them up there because I can tell right away by when they stand up. So I'll still pull them and I go, and let me also get. So then I'll pull three people up there. So I have a choice between the two women. Sometimes I'm not sure 100%. So, or I'll pick someone and I'm like, crap, this girl looks like she's 17, you know, and I'm like, that's not going to work. But I don't want to dismiss her. You know, make her feel bad. So I pull her up and someone else up at the same time. And then I just pick them up and I do my eeny, meeny, miny, mo. And I just pick the person I want to be stuck with. And that's it. So, that's kind of, I think my comedy lends itself to, and my style of comedy lends itself to a lot of, I can dismiss someone differently than other people can. You know, where a lot of shows you're like, God, that magician, what a dickhead. With mine, they already think I am a dickhead. So it's kind of like, okay, you know? I hope they don't think I'm a dickhead. But you follow what I'm saying. You've got that little sarcasm. So it's what you just did to me. Okay, Shazam, we're done. Yeah. I just go, well, thanks for coming on up here. Goodbye. And if I can, sometimes I have like a smaller, quick trick I'll do with them. And then goodbye. You're a blast. Adios.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's also some interesting layers in terms of, like, with the vacuum routine. Yeah. You know, you've got a rubber glove on. The part that actually touches their face is a part that's rubber glove. So you can tell that there's a lot of, like, consideration.
There is, but not to cut you off, but oh, my God. Sometimes it still is gross. Like, the guy will open his mouth or stick his tongue out or something. I'm like, what the hell are you doing, you weirdo, you know? And I'm like, I know the audience doesn't see it, but I'm like, okay. And you still have to be careful. Like, if someone has, like, say, false teeth or something, I still put my hand on. I have to make it where it looks like I'm actually I'm touching them, but ever so slightly, not really, you know, because I don't want to catch their lip in there or something. I mean, you never know, you know. So it's just kind of weird. That guy today was a really good sport, though. He was really fun, and most people are. You know, most people are pretty good. And I could, you know, you see me. I'm putting my arms around them. I'm hanging on them. I'm, like, whispering things to them. And, you know, they usually are pretty good. They have fun with it because I know what I'm about to do to them. So I have to kind of make them my buddy, you know? Your turn, Kayla.
we're signaling.
You two are hilarious.
We've been doing this a long time.
How do you...
Well... Thank you. We're done. Jeff cut in out.
This bit is my favorite.
It's there every time.
It's a great bit.
It's terrible. This is our bit. Come on, Kayla, join the bit.
Thank you so much for turning into Shazam. And remember, my camera ass. I love it. Keep all of that in. How do you learn all of this? Because we have a lot of people that will write in and be like, I never thought about not being mean to my audience. How do I know? And I know, like, the college market, I'm in the college market. I love it. It's hardening. It makes you very bitter, but
I awesome. Could see you doing the college market,
Thank
though.
You.
No, I'll tell you why. You look like a college student. They probably love you. You blend. You have a good personality. But are you ever too much for them? Like, as far, sometimes they're very strange.
I personally come right up to where that line is.
Yeah.
But It helps to be a woman. I can push the boundary a little bit further because
I know how you feel.
I don't have, right? You get it.
Because you're 2 feet tall.
Oh, yeah. That's very helpful.
We'll bring that up later.
What happened?
How tall are you?
8 feet. But I'm only like 5'7".
Okay, great.
So, yeah.
So I'm 5'10 and a half.
Yeah, you look taller.
And then
yeah.
I wear heels. So
but
I
that like, doesn't always make you easier to pick on them. Do you know what I'm saying?
What it does make me is... I'm sort of like everybody's older sister.
Oh, that's hilarious. I never thought about that.
So that's that. So how I, if I.
Yeah.
So when I started diving into the college market, what I learned from watching other people do the college market is college kids always want to know who you are to them.
Yes.
And so if you can define that clearly.
Right, right.
So like my mentors are clearly their mom and dad. Or they're their best friend's mom and dad.
Right.
So my mentors are comedy-based mentalists, and everybody sees them as their best friend's mom and dad. You would be embarrassed if they were your mom and dad.
Right.
But they're since they are making you turkey on Thanksgiving,
right.
They're great.
Right.
And, you know, you love them. So for me, I'm the older sister, or I'm the senior to the freshman. I'm like the cool RA. Like, that's who I am to the college kids. So I can get away with a little bit more. But when I say that, my style of comedy is I open up a question, and however they dive into that question is how I respond. So I never push somebody to do something stupid. I never even, like, if they don't go in, there's none of that. I just go with my normal comedy jokes. But if they dive in, we've got an addendum 10 minutes of just me going, what? And it's great. So I'm just sort of, I'm not even driving. They're driving the bus on the adventure. I'm just in the passenger seat making fun of their bad directions.
Yeah.
So it just depends. So is that how you figured all of that?
Well, what happened with me, and I really respect anyone these days that can work the college market. And just like what I do, my audiences are different every day, but so are college students. Mm-hmm. Every single day, every college is just a little bit different. And I think the thing I would always fear for me is I say one wrong thing, someone stands up, is got this on video, and they escalate it to something like a movement type thing, and you're banned on the college circuit. Because that can happen.
Yeah, you know Andy Gross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But some people deserve for that to happen too, depending on what you do. I don't even mean it because I would do something wrong to a woman as much as something I could say could be taken wrong. You know me. I mean, in the show, you know, I pushed the edge a little bit. And today I didn't even get that racy, basically, because it wasn't really that crowd. But sometimes I do. And I just get a feel for the audience. And I have fun with it. I mean, today we had the Austrian guy, so I thought of some fun things with him. But that could have gotten really weird, too. But so I think for me, and back to your question, was how did I develop that? It was a lot of trial and error, believe it or not. Like, there were some moments you're like, okay, I don't want that to happen again, you know? So it was just years of experience. But I've been doing this for a long time before I even had my showroom. And I remember when I was on the college circuit, and one day, you know, you'd be at a show and you'd get standing ovation. And the next day, I would do it like the card on the forehead, for example. I would do the card on the forehead, and I'd have a girl up there, and I'd stick it on my head. She wouldn't see it. And he'd make a comment like something to the effect of calling her stupid, not saying it, but saying it. And the entire audience would like turn on you because you're making fun of a girl. And I'm like, oh my God, this is really weird. Like, my sister made fun of me. I'm just making fun of my sister, of a little thing, you know. But and so I've had times where the whole audience turns on you and like it's boo, you know. So you go from a standing ovation to boo. What the hell's going on here, you know? Or half the show would be great, and then the second half is just so weird. So I think it was just years of working with people, but just you have to. I think you have to start and really look at your character first, your performance persona. And a lot of people say, well, I'm not a character, you know, they'll think they are not, but you still, you're not going to be like Kayla, you're not going to be you here walking into a college. You're going to at least be the best Kayla you can be, or that character. Carissa, you have a character, but your normal character, I think you do get away with it because your character kind of, you are a little bit snide sort of, right?
Yeah, I can get away with some crazy nonsense.
Yeah.
Because, well, when you do a character, there's an established game of pretend.
Yeah, right? If so they can read it's a character, that you can, because you're kind of a little bit, you know, over the top. Not over the top as far as not in the real world, but you are more along the lines of that, they get what you're doing. You're trying to dress differently, era, you know.
I don't think many people in the room think that that's what I'm like all the time.
Right, right, right.
I think everyone's like, oh, we're playing a game, pretend. It's fine. Yeah. Whereas, you know, for what Kayla does.
And what I do.
And what you do, it's a little more They think it's sensitive. You. Us,
yeah, they think it's you. Like, even if you're playing their older sister, they're still. So I think you have to define what that character is. And my character, actually, where I used to just be mean, sort of, in some ways, it could come off mean. My intent as a character is not to be a mean person. It's to actually have fun. And there's a huge difference between saying a line with a smile versus saying a line with a frown. And, you know, so I try to keep people happy and have fun. I felt like today I couldn't go as far as I normally wanted to do. But for that audience, it was plenty. Like, you could tell to them that was edgy. But to you, or if you've been there with Amber and Ryan, or, you know, it's like, no, I've seen edgier. But you have to feel your crowd out. And so I do change it from day to day. But I know where that limit is. But I would recommend anybody that gets into this business, you have to work, you know, you just have to work. But I think you'd, you know, get a book on character, or if it's comedy, man, you know, get some books that'll give you tips on at least picking audience members. And is it Ian Keebler? Does he have something out there? It's a book, but Ian Keebler, I think it's, there's a few good books on audience management and handling.
Yeah. Is there someone that you watched while you were developing that?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it was Don Rickles. And Don Rickles is like my hero. I loved him so much. And I actually got to know him later in life, you know. But that's not a good thing to learn when you're a younger person. Yeah, because... So I always followed comedians. I loved watching comedians. Him and Howie Mandel back in the day, before he was known on Who Wants to Be he was the Deal or No Deal, and then America's Got Talent. Before that, Howie was doing comedy. He did comedy shows, and he was great. There are some good books out there with some good tips on audience management. But they only guide you. They're just used as a guide. Like, it'll tell you, like, who maybe you can select or how to choose people. But I think a lot of it comes from performing. And I'll tell you something. You did street performing. You learned so much from that. Colleges. Oh, wow. You just have to learn. Do you ever do teasers at colleges, like where you perform in the cafeteria or close up, or to get people to your show?
I do my absolute best not to.
I know, it is work.
It is work. Soul sucking.
But I used to do that, and I would do it to get people in the auditoriums. And also, now you win. They know who you are. It's like, okay, this is good.
Yeah.
You know? God, that's so funny you say that. But when you have to, and a teaser is where you go out and you have to, like, basically beg people to come to your show. You know, you're doing magic for them, and, like, you're walking up to the tables in cafeterias or outside and, hey, I'm doing a show tonight. But I'm not known enough that you don't know who I am. So, but that's all. I went and did a college. You'll find this interesting. I went and did a college, and it was in Michigan. I think it was Michigan. It was University of Michigan on one of their campuses. And the show was on, it was in a hallway. It felt like a strip mall, but it was in their college. And you're in the middle of hallway where people are walking back and forth, and the stage is right in the middle. And I'm like, this kind of sucks. Like, how do you get these people to stop? And they're like, oh, no, it does suck. Carrot Top was here last week and walked off. And I'm thinking, what? And this is Carrot Top. And Carrot Top did so many college shows. And I'm like, why did you tell me that, you know? And I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm like, what do you mean he walked off? And they're like, oh, yeah. He's like, this sucks. And he's like, and he just left because, you know, he couldn't get people's attention because they're just walking back and forth. And you know how good he is. I mean, it's like, really? I'm like, God, that was like the worst thing you could tell me. But now I had this attitude. I'm like, all right, I'm going to get him, you know? And I'm like, I'm going to do it. So I get out there and I just start yelling at people, making fun of them as they're walking by. You with the book bag, you know. I'm like, where the hell do you think you're going? Pay attention. And so I'm making fun of people as they're walking by. Now they're stopping to look at me. They're like, what is he doing? And I did really well, but I had to have that aggressive personality. And Karatop's actually a really nice guy, you know. So had they known what he was going to do, he probably would have been fine. But he's trying to tell these jokes with this stuff, and he's so nice. And I was not nice at all, because I'm like, I just got to yell at these people. It's street performing,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's walk-by lines. Walk-by lines are a really interesting way to, like, gather a crowd.
Yeah.
But also, I think that walk-by lines can be an interesting way to learn about what kind of conversations people are interested in having, or what they'll let you say about them. You know, you make fun of a guy's... A classic thing for a walk-by line is you make fun of a guy's got camo pants.
Yeah.
And you make fun of how his legs are invisible, or whatever version of that seemed appropriate.
Yeah.
That guy made a choice to put on ugly pants. And so you kind of, you know, they're going to be more okay with you making fun of his pants. But you can't make fun of, like, the way their kid looks.
Right. Or the way they look.
Or the way they look. Or,
although I do.
You know, there's certain lines. Yeah, yeah. And doing walk-by lines, I think, can also often be a really good education as a street performer. And being like, oh, this is interesting. I can comment on choices people make, but I'm, you know, can't quite get away with.
Yeah. How did you learn that, though? Because that's very astute of you. And you're all of 19 years old. Like, how did you learn that? Did you study someone else that did street performing? Because that's difficult. Both you ladies, you actually have a lot more in-depth experience.
We're better than you thought we would.
Yeah.
We understand.
Well, on the side that I didn't think you'd have knowledge of. I mean, how many people in our art form go out and just perform, and I don't think they do understand the depth of how to treat people and how to understand, like, human nature. You know, they've got their tricks. And you can win someone over with just tricks, but other circumstances come up. But how did you learn all that stuff? That's really interesting.
I think if you're going to choose to learn from the School of Hard Knocks, if you're really going to choose to learn on the street, you have to recognize that that's what you're there for. And for me, when I was doing street, I didn't do street for very long, but I knew
she's
I was
she's a street
there.
Worker, Kayla.
That's what I'm saying. When I was doing circle shows.
We take a time out.
time in. When I was doing circle shows at fringe festivals, especially around Canada, you know, where people can be very sensitive, I knew that that was an education. I knew that's not what I wanted to do forever. I was there to be able to get bulletproof, because I didn't want to start doing weird things with my show. I had a fairly stock standard show. I knew eventually I wanted to do a weirder show, but I knew that before I could get there, I needed to be a little bit more bulletproof. I needed to be able to, like, pull my own crowd and all this stuff. So part of it was just every day going out and going, I'm going to do 10 new walk-by lines. I'm going to write them at lunch, and I'm going to try and fit them into the show. I'm going to make different choices. I'm going to do these. And then really paying attention to when people walk.
Yeah.
Because with a street show, no one has to be there. So if you aren't funny enough, they'll leave. If you're too interesting too fast, they'll leave. If you aren't likable, they'll leave. If you insult them in a way that everybody isn't in on or isn't careful, they'll leave. So you very, very quickly learn, oh, that's too far, or that's not far enough, or I'm not interesting enough. And so it's that fine balancing act of going, I have to say enough to be weird and interesting and edgy, but not so much
that you
I
chase
ever
them
cross
off,
a line.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not in a bad way, but as a woman, it is tougher, too. It's the same with women in comedy. And it's not that they're bad. It's just, look how many male magicians there are. There's a lot of terrible ones, but there's so many more to choose from. And it's the same with comedy, too. There's not as many female comics. So sometimes people will be like, I can't stand female comics. Well, no, but you're just... There's a lot of male comics you can't stand either. It's just because there's so few, you're not finding the ones that you like. You know what I'm saying? There's just, it's not as many to pull from. It's a very tough thing. Like, I'm impressed that both of you have not only this dry sense of humor, this sarcastic stuff, but also that you've made it work for you. You know, there was a guy that did, that you might know of, Amazing Jonathan, you know, and he was doing street performing. Which guy is that? So he's doing street performing, and he was telling me, he stepped away for 5 minutes, and he comes back, and someone's standing in his spot. And the guy in his spot, and the guy, he couldn't gather a crowd, and the guy in his spot gathers the crowd. And he's like, who the hell's this guy think he is? And it was Harry Anderson.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so, and so then he learns some things from Harry Anderson. But, you know, and Jonathan, look how great he is. And that's how he learned street performing. He's like, oh, I see. So... everyone's got their start that it's a difficult, you know, whatever it would be. I think the best advice is whatever you want to do, stick with it. Like, don't give up. I mean, unless you suck, if everyone tells you suck, but then you got to get better. But, you know, but it's tough. There's no blueprint for what we do. And because everybody's so different, you know what I mean? That kind of, I think that you need to find who you are.
Yeah. You got to pay attention. I mean, if you're not paying attention, I think it's very easy to accidentally say or do something inappropriate.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a lot of the time as well, this is something we haven't brought up in the podcast before, but it's kind of been bouncing around in my head, is that
helium.
Is helium. So much helium in my head. If you do something wrong and you lose the room,
yeah,
I think there are sort of two ways to take that. Either you can go, oops, this is an education, I won't do that again. And that's something that you brought up a lot, which is why it's, you know, I'm thinking about it. It's because you said, oh, well, you know, I did this, and then it let me know, hey, don't go that far. It's too edgy. And I think the other thing that people can do is they shut down and they go, oh, well, it's their fault, or they don't get me.
Worst. Yeah.
And it stops people from learning, right? They get really defensive. And I think we're seeing that in magic right now a lot, because we hear a lot of people complain about how, like, oh, you know, everything's so PC and everything's so bad and I can't say anything. And it's like, no, it's not that you can't say anything. It's that they're... you have to care and be paying better attention now, and you didn't have to pay attention as much before.
Yeah.
Your empathy is a muscle that you have to train. Empathy is something that takes a while to learn.
Yeah.
And we can see, Kayla and I could see it in your show, you are extremely empathetic towards your audience. You're looking at people, you're making decisions based on the way they're actually feeling, and you're checking in constantly.
I wish I didn't have to. Honestly, I wish I could just... But you know what? It makes for a better show, though. But you know what's funny? I'll tell you something that's something I've learned, though, that's really interesting. Don Rickles, and I got to know him, not great, but I mean, I knew him enough where near the end, you know, I'd be backstage, I would talk to him, and it was great. Don Rickles, and for those that haven't seen him, I mean, you go watch some old stuff. He's amazing. He's like ruthless, insult comic. But he only does it the first 10 minutes of his show, believe it or not. And then the rest of the show, and he just comes out, he really attacks him at the beginning. But then the rest of his show, he does some songs, and he still makes fun, but not on the same level. And so now you get to see, like, wow, this is a really nice guy. I mean, he goes, you know, I kid, I love you people, though, this and that, you know, this and that. And he says that. Well, I used to come out like Don Rickles at the opening of my show and just rip on everyone off the bat. And then I realized, you know what? For me, it doesn't work that way. So I became kind of the opposite, where now I'm a little – I'm not saying I'm nice up front, but I'm not. I'm not like I don't rip on them immediately. You know, I kind of subtly get myself into it. But then I never give up the rest of the show. In other words, I build to that, where he did the opposite. And it just – what he did worked for him. And – but – what I do, I think, works better for me. And then near the end, I still, you know, I tell, hey, if I insulted anyone, don't take it personally. I just didn't care for you that much. You know, that kind of, so I never really let down, where he did the opposite. At the end, he'd say, I really, you know, love you people and this and that and this and that. But I think people know, they could tell who I am. I think they, you know, kind of see me as a person, sort of, you know, I think they could see through. You've got a little view shine through, or it's all phony. You know what I mean? They could see through, you know, bullshit. They know.
What is the worst thing you've ever done on stage?
On stage. Look at, I wish you guys could see Kayla's face. She instantly goes into this, I think we're done, but I'll finish this because Carissa dragged him here. Oh my God, you're so dry. Your humor is worse than mine. It's so great.
Yeah, it takes some getting used to it.
Yeah,
and then you're like, it's funny. I miss it. When I'm not around Kayla, I'm like, everyone's too nice.
I miss her, and she's here. She just drifted away from me. What was the question? For real, what was the question?
What's the worst thing you've done on stage? I don't mean mad. I mean, like, in terms of an improvised line that you've gone.
I did a thumb tip.
I might have. Yeah.
I did a thumb tip. Wait, no.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I did this thing about, I had some Germans in the crowd, and I say it like now, even like there's something wrong, and there's nothing wrong with German people. But I had this thing, and I had like about 30 German people in the crowd, and they really didn't speak much English at all, you know? So I went, and I mean, I was a little bit younger, and they're making the jokes, and so I pull out kind of these things about the war, you know, these things about, it was kind of like, I don't even remember the specifics. I just remember it going pretty sour. I'm like, relax, people. We won the war, you know, that kind of thing. And then it didn't take a good turn, because the other people in the audience, you know, what I didn't realize at the time was Germans are very sensitive about their background. It's almost like, you know, Americans, we're fine with that we killed Native Americans, it seems like. Like, no one seems to be bothered by that. You know, I mean, it's a horrible thing, you know? It's awful. But the German culture is very aware of their history with, you know, Jews and other cultures. They're very aware of what happened. So they're kind of sensitive to that subject, where I didn't think they would be as much because, you know, we're making these. It was a joke, and it wasn't too bad. I didn't go directly to oven jokes or anything like that. But it was enough where they were still, you know, taken back. So I kind of realized certain things are sensitive to certain cultures because they're not proud of that. And that's actually a little closer than, you know, we're talking 1940s where versus us, we weren't even around, you know, right. When America was first discovered, supposedly.
Are you, you're not Jewish, are you?
I'm Jewish, but.
So you just have, I mean, you can so just to go, me, shit.
But they don't know I am. That was the problem. The audience doesn't know if I'm Jewish.
Yeah.
And I don't observe it, really. I'm not. But because growing up, that way I can make it. We've always made those jokes because you could do it. But if they don't know that, you can't.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm telling. And that's the worst. No, it's okay. I'm Jewish. Mm-hmm. Oh, now you hate me even more.
Yeah.
You know, so you can't go there, you know, like that. So, but that was always a weird thing for me. And I'm sure things came up along the way. Listen, I'm smart enough to know now. I know when a movement's taking place. Like, I know about the hashtag Me Too, you know? So you can't play stupid now. You know what I mean? If you're going to decide to go there, you can do it. You can do the line. You can do something. But be prepared. That's all I'm saying. But I know how to get out of everything, too. Like, you know, I'm not too worried now. But I used to make fun of women back in the college days. And boy, they'll turn on you really because, you know, they're college girls and they're, you know, they're sensitive and their peers stick up for them. So that was like the, you know, that was those were bad moments that I don't want to remember. I'm like, ah, this sucks. But I had a worse show, though, one time. I was doing a show in Chicago in a theater. And I invited, if the place felt, it was seated 1,000 people, so I get 1,000 people that I knew, which is the worst thing when you're not ready and all your peers and friends and everybody, are peers still friends or are peers just peers? Yeah, they're not all friends, right? So I had all these people show up that I knew, family, everything. And I'm like, oh man, I got this big show. I told everyone I'm shooting it for HBO, a special, you know. So I went and I'm like, this is such a big thing and I'm going to change everything. So, you know, I'm going on stage with like all new stuff, not tried, not tested, not any of that. And it sucked, you know, it was so bad. Like nothing was working. And just because I didn't planned it before. And I'm going about it like none of it's bombing. You know what I mean? I'm just keep doing it like, but wait, there's more, that kind of stuff. I'm like, you know, and they didn't boo me or anything because they knew me. But I mean, a couple people did. They're like, one guy's like, you suck. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I had some comment back, but so then, you know, that was the worst show of my entire life because I had to, like, go and shake hands with people on their way out. And they're like, oh, you were good.
No.
I'm like, you're a fucking liar, you know. But that was hard. And, you know, you have to – nowadays, I mean, I could put something on stage I've never done before, but I know my style kind of. So it's not going to be too far from who I am. But I was just trying anything. It was so stupid. I'm just like, oh, my God. When you look back, you're like, oh, yeah, should have practiced that. And I was young and mouthy. You know, try being Don Rickles when you're like 23 years old to people. Hey, lady, you're fat. You know, you can't do that.
And they're like, get out. Yeah. And have you noticed that that's sort of evolved with your, you know, as you've grown into your act?
Yeah.
I mean, part of it could be just like you're a better performer, you're more tuned in. It sounds like because you're doing sort of an insult comic magic show, you have to be very politically aware. So there's elements of that. But it's also like you look different now. You know, how you look and how your character presents.
Yeah, I'm an old man.
I don't think that's quite exactly what I'm saying. But yeah, like, do you feel like it's evolved since basically you looked like a kid on stage and now?
Yeah, I think that was a lot of it because as a kid, you're barking at people. And you see how I'm kind of bossy. Mm-hmm. Not bossy like stand here, this, but I mean, but I am in control. So, yeah, and I used to not be that clever navigating people in the show. You know what I mean? I just would be, I needed them for something. You're going to do this. Stand here. They didn't cooperate. I blame them. Like, really, it's my fault. You know, I'm the one who chose that person, and I need to learn how to handle them properly. But instead, I'd be like, you're the worst. Oh, my God. You know, not even saying the words, just treating them like that. Like, like, boy, people aren't normally this bad, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think things did change. You know, at the time I was doing the paper balls over the head and all that stuff, which was always fun. I did with the toilet paper roll. This is before everybody was doing it, though. You know, I mean, now it's like, I think people are still doing that one. I'm not positive, but I think they were. So I pick a guy, I'd have to put the fingers together, put the roll on their fingers, all that kind of stuff. And we're talking a long time ago. And so I had all these jokes, but I'd be making fun of them, throwing things over their head. But you want the audience to laugh at them, but I'd be like, oh, you're so stupid. You don't do that to them. You know, your thing is you want to, you know, be polite enough where, you know, you want the audience to laugh, but no, you're doing great, but try. But I'd be like, God, you're so dumb. Let's try it again. Like, what the hell? God, that's poor treatment. You know, if somebody, you know, I was treated them badly, you know, if I didn't know, you know, you don't know. And people would laugh. That's the problem. They'd still be laughing. They're like, ah, this guy's like kind of outrageous, but I don't know. And, you know, I did comedy clubs that too. And you could do anything in a comedy club. No one really cared. So.
Yeah, we see that in the show, this carefulness where every time you help, first of all, you help every single person down the stairs so they don't fall.
Yeah, yeah.
And in that moment, you really focus on going, you did great. Everything you did was fantastic. Mm-hmm. You were perfect. What a good sport. And so there's all this affirmational language. Because I think especially, I encounter this a lot with my show. Because
death threats.
Wait, so many death threats. That's well, people come up to me all the time and go, wow, you really handled that guy well. And I don't know how to, you know, the biggest secret of my show is like, I make him bad at things.
Yeah.
The way the show is written is that no matter what he says, it's the wrong answer. And so a lot of what I do has to be very carefully worded so that that person is wrong. However, they are reminded at the end of the show, hey, the point was for you to be wrong. And so you did all the right things.
Oh, that's great.
You
know,
you
yeah.
played your role perfectly. Yeah. And I think that's something to be very careful of. When I do the Chicago Magic Lounge, because of the way that the room is set up, I actually can go out and talk to those people. And I really go out of my way to make sure that they all get to meet Lucy and have a conversation with her and be like, oh, she loved me and everything was great. Because, you know, the character, the trouble I have is that the character is very lovable.
Yeah.
And so often I have a situation like Simon, the first time I did the castle, I'll never forget Simon. Simon was this really adorable young man. And I, you know, I was.
I know, we keep hearing about him. Every episode you're talking about
he's
Simon.
He's so good.
It's really
tell us what Simon said.
Well, you know, I did go to art school, so I know when a. Anyway, did you go to art school? I hadn't said anything.
It's been an hour and 15 minutes since you mentioned it.
I know.
It.
Thank you. I'm so happy. I feel much more relaxed. My sphincter is much more relaxed.
Congrats. Carissa mentioned
Let's talk more about that.
My sphincter.
I was like, art school?
No, never art school. So Simon was this volunteer I got the first time I did the castle. He was in the Wednesday show at the second show. I remember perfectly because he was so aware. I was so aware of him because he was so excited and he loved the character so much. He was so into the show. And then I did the bit where he messes up and he was really hard on himself. And at one point in the show, I asked him what his favorite dessert is. And I went, what's your favorite dessert? And he goes, pecan pie. And then he goes, ugh! No, Simon, no! You don't even like pecan pie.
Oh,
and I had
great.
To go, you can change your mind. He goes, no. Pecan pie. And he was so, I could just see
that's great.
He wanted to please me so bad.
Yeah.
He didn't get that the bit was you can't, she's unpleasable.
That's great.
Right? Like you grovel at her feet and she's never satisfied.
Right.
That's the whole bit. And he wasn't
women,
in on
words,
the bit.
Your takes on women.
Exactly. So it was. Yeah. So afterwards, I made sure to find him in the lobby, and I had I let him meet Lucy and see how much she loved him. But I really went out of my way, and it was such a wake up call for me to be like, okay, that game of push and pull, I got to be really present because it's easy to go too far.
Oh yeah, and it's funny because I do in that newspaper routine that I do, where I have the lady, I'd say turn around, and she physically turns around, and that came by accident one day. And then I go, no, I meant the paper. But I wait till she turns her body around. I go, no, I meant the paper. Well, it was funny because today she goes, that's not what you meant. You know, she whispers to me, that's not what you meant. But it's really funny because that is something. And then they go, oh, sorry. A lot of times they think they screwed up, you know. And I don't say anything. That's all done silently. So it's a good moment, but I always try and find a way to, you know, squeeze that one in because it's funny.
You also don't say you did it wrong. You said I meant, like, oh, I didn't give you the
right.
proper instruction.
Right, I said,
which is really well done,
And those little things take, because I used to bark the orders at them, but I don't bark it. You know what I mean? If you were to go, no, you're so stupid, turn around, you know, which probably I did that when I was younger all the time, but you know, but you're different. You know what I'm saying? You just grow. I look back and I'm like, how did this stuff, how did people like me back then? But they did. And you do adjust though, like, cause I did a lot of corporate work. So that sometimes you'd have to be more PC. So, you know, that wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
But what was the question? No, I'm just kidding.
Awesome. So we're going to probably wrap up in a second. Is there anything you want to say that you haven't said?
I just wanted to talk about the lingerie you two are wearing. I think it's beautiful. And
Thank you.
We have professional uniforms for yes. our job here.
Professional
uniforms. And I have to say, you're the first person to mention it, which yeah. is very strange.
Yeah, most people don't.
Yeah, we're always wearing garters and no one ever says anything.
That's your sphincter.
Yeah, it's my sphincter. My sphincter was showing it off.
No, I just wanted to say people could check me out, you know, at the Mike Hammer. If you want to see my show, MikeHammerShow.com is the website, MikeHammerShow.com. And if you want to suffer through a 75-minute show, mine is it.
Yeah, join us in the pain. So now we're going to play a lightning round.
Oh, I love it.
So some of these questions will be
quick, like lightning.
Correct.
Fast.
Thank you for getting it.
Find someone who gets the premise.
So here, lightning round, we're going to ask you a question, answer them how you wish. So okay. Your choices are you can answer them quickly or you can answer them Max Maven style.
I'd like to answer them backwards.
That'd be preferred. Yeah.
Max Maven style. Over an hour and a half.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he did whatever he wanted.
Yeah. And he knows that we say this now, by the way.
Oh, of course he does.
He's my best friend.
Love you, Max.
Not. So we're gonna lightning round it. This is great. Okay, here we go. You ready? Okay.
And
scene. Oh, that'd be the end of it. Okay, go on.
And clap it in. Yeah. Okay. So congratulations again on the having wrestled the two alligators.
Yes.
What is the largest singular alligator you've wrestled?
Oh my God, you're such bitches. I hate you guys.
We can skip that one if you want.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll skip it. We'll answer a different one.
Would have been Gorman. Gorman, the large, he was a 600-pound alligator.
Oh, that's great.
Okay.
Congrats.
Next.
Yeah, great. Yeah. So you've won many different fighting contests. Out of all the fighting contests you've ever done, which flavor is your favorite to just eat really, really fast?
Apple pie.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh,
nice.
That's interesting.
Nice.
Because it's so tart and sour and like me, sour.
Yeah, I feel that.
Like
from
my
you.
Personality.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Plus, when the alligator eats you when you're eating sour, they'll just spit you out because nice. They're like,
"Oh, that's a really interesting tactic.
What a good tip."
Yep.
Oh, now everybody knows.
Yep. Smart. Can you touch upon how does it feel to become the first magician to ever be a billionaire?
Copperfield.
That's tomorrow. I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
we should
mind.
Get to the
Copperfield.
Actual
question. That's great.
Oh, here's my camera. Okay, here we go.
So, these are real questions.
Oh, that is so horrible. So how does it feel to have $10,000?
How does it feel to own your own car?
Yeah, because he doesn't own a car, so there you go.
That's not true.
All right, so real questions.
He owns a Ford Windstar minivan.
Yeah, he doesn't drive, though.
No, he doesn't.
No.
Yeah.
You know,
so the car is just for show, huh?
Well, he has someone drive him.
He has someone drive him.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But back to my questions.
Weird. Your questions.
We didn't write any.
What would you recommend as the best performance resource for an entertainer? Like, what is the thing you preference?
It depends on what kind of style. But if you want to do card tricks, I still think Royal Road to Card Magic was fantastic. I really like that a lot. If you want to do mentalism, of course, 13 Steps to Mentalism is probably it's amazing. I have some other books I like too, but that one's good. These are things I recommend to people when they first, you know, get into magic. But you said single source, right? Single source?
Well, I mean, you can Max
if it was, yeah, I still want to know that other freaking book that I do reference all the time.
I looked it up.
There is a great book on scripting that I want to get the name. It's it was actually redone now. God, you guys are catching me when my blood sugar dropped. You'd think I would have had enough in that coffee, but for some reason, maybe we can tag these at the end and we can let you know the book because I want to find out the book. There's a really good book on scripting, and it was by, I feel so terrible. I even reached out to the guy. I hate that stuff. Oh, man, I'm the worst. You know, Ken Weber also has a very good book on some performance tips.
Yeah.
He's got a great book.
Maximum Entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Maximum Entertainment. There we have one. And I do want to recommend this book. This is really good. for hecklers. If anyone, you know, a lot of people are afraid of hecklers. Keith Fields put out a book. You know Keith? He's a really good guy.
Good friend.
So Keith Fields has an excellent book called How to Handle Hecklers, and I think it's great, and I'll tell you why I think it's great. Because someone always is going to chime in into your show at some point, but you would think it'd be great because he gives you a bunch of heckle lines to come back with, which are great. But more importantly, it teaches you how to identify what type of heckler this is. Because sometimes they're heckling, but they're really fun people, and they just want to join in the fun. So you don't necessarily want to beat them down. And then sometimes they're the drunk heckle. And sometimes engaging with them is not the smartest thing because they think they're still having fun, and they are, but the audience isn't because they're just drunk. So it gives you various tips on how to handle different types of hecklers. And I think it's such a great reference for that, just to learn a little more about people, you know. But I read a lot. There's a lot of good videos out there now for a lot of people. But I think just read as much as you can or watch as much as you can. And the best tip that I can honestly give you is don't try and be somebody else. You need to find your own character because you're going to want, you know, you don't need to be 13 years old or even 17 walking around, look, watch. And you laugh when you say that, but, you know, David Blaine made a career doing this, but that is true to who he is. Like, he's actually a little bit deadpan. He's a mellow guy. He's a really nice guy, but that fits for his character. And he knew what he was doing when he went with that. He wanted to make the magic sell as if he's really not doing much and it's just kind of happening. But now you have people copying that. It's like, they don't get it. It's like, that's not you, though. You know, find your persona, you know, and make what you have work. And that's the biggest advice that I could kind of give and steal from everybody.
Perfect. What are you reading or watching right now?
Actually, well, currently, watching on television, I want to tell you, I'm reading this book called Hyperfocus. Sometimes I read things that have nothing to do with magic, but Penn Jillette actually recommended this. It's a book on hyperfocus, and it really, in this day of social media and everything hitting you constantly and bombarding you, it basically gives you really good tips on how to focus on something specific when you want to improve on something and maybe shut your phones off for a good amount of time, you know? And it's got some great tips, but it's called Hyperfocus.
Chris Bailey, Hyperfocus, How to Be More Productive in a World of Distraction.
Yeah, there it is. It's a good book. It's really, really helpful because that's how we are. It's kind of a little bit of lunatics, you know? Oh, there's a really good read right now I just read by Rob Zabrecki. It's Essays by Rob Zabrecki. They have it at Vanishing Ink.
It's A to Z, I believe, right?
It's A, yes.
It's his lecture. Yeah.
His lecture. There is a good study on character. You know, you talk about characters. His character is amazing. Matt King, amazing character. But I love his thoughts on it. And even for someone that's been doing it a while, it's just got some good things to remind you of certain things. I think it's great. Yeah, you've got the title there, mm-hmm. right?
It's part of the Astonishing Essays.
Yeah.
Rob Zabrecki? Yeah. And it's the ABCs of the magic by Rob Zabrecki.
Yeah. It's very good. Did you see his lecture ever?
His lecture was instrumental in the creation of Lucy, actually. It was the first. I had Lucy in mind like about 4 months before I saw that lecture, but it gave me permission to walk down the road. And it actually, more than gave me permission, it was basically the only positive feedback I had until Lucy was born. Because the whole time I was creating her, people were like, don't do that. That's terrible.
Yeah.
No one's going to like that. Everyone's going to hate it. And now I've been nominated for Stage Magician of the Year. Fuck the haters.
It's great. But that's a really good book. And as far as watching, you know, I sometimes will pick these certain comedies out of Netflix. And I'll tell you, there's one by Adam Sandler's latest one. Oh, it's amazing. And I liked all his movies, but I wasn't always a fan of his stand-up because I don't like the little time. You know, to me, it's just a little childish and whatever. But it was brilliant. It was really, really good. I thought it just, he had some, it's amazing because you felt it was like truly him, and he had a little dedication there to Chris Farley, and it was so amazing. And I just coming from comedy, it was so fun to watch because he'd kind of stripped himself and started all over, it felt like, you know. And I thought it was really, really amazing. I thought it was a really good special. One of the people that I love, though, is Bill Burr. I think everything he does is great. Do women like Bill Burr? I don't know. No. I can see where, I don't think so. I can see where you would, because you're kind of like a guy. Not that you're like a guy, but your attitude is very, like, your normal life. You're dry, sensitive. Both you two, yeah. Like, talk like.
I like Bill Burr, but most.
Yeah, I don't think they do.
That's not his demographic.
Yeah.
I don't think it's so much like women don't like him. Yeah. It's that it's a narrative that is not necessarily...
The view of a woman. Right, yeah.
But
right,
I'm also
right.
Like, I grew up with him. Yeah. Not him per se, but like, I grew up... I'm
he was your
Coast,
dad, right?
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I changed my last name because I didn't want to. Yeah. I didn't want to ever think down. I was riding off his fame.
Yeah.
Now it's out there. Jeff, edit this out because we don't want people to know that Kayla secretly related to Bill. Okay, question the next.
Is this about the alligator again? I'm better
prepared.
This
is more about the alligator. It's sort of about the alligator in a roundabout way. Big dogs or little dogs?
Oh, what's a 25-pound dog? Is that considered little or medium?
What's the breed?
Well, I have a pug, and I love it. He's so adorable. He's like a 25-pound little thing, and he loves to eat, and he's a great dog. He's just so fun. So his name is Max. I spent a lot of time coming up with that name. What are you going to call it? Max. So medium. I know that wasn't one of your answers, but I love dogs. I love all animals, though, but mostly dogs.
And alligators.
Yeah, but why don't magicians kiss their birds, like, after they are pulling it out? Every time they produce a bird, they kiss it all the time. Isn't that
weird?
Because then it looks like you care about them.
But they don't. Stuffing those things into...
They love them.
Who's kissing birds?
Every magician that produces a bird. Yeah. So annoying.
But they don't actually. They just go and then keep.
Yeah, because they really hate it, I think. I think none of them like their birds.
Absolutely.
Okay. I don't know how I feel about that.
What's something you do to relax? What's your go-to relaxing activity?
I like to race illegally on the street.
Sure. Just down Dean Martin.
In your fancy car.
Dean Martin, yeah. Honestly, I do like to read sometimes, but I like to... watch movies. You know, I just watched, everyone already watched this like years ago, I watched the series of Dexter, and I'm like, this is really good. And I even liked the final one because everyone said how bad it was, you know, that's the worst, and I just watched it. But I like watching series just to kind of escape, get away. I go out, you know, this is Vegas, I don't really party like I used to, I'm not out in the clubs like I used to do, you know. That gets a little old in Vegas, doesn't it, a little bit, right? Yeah.
I've never.
You do the club
never.
Scene? It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
out here.
We
so stupid.
We can't get sick of it because we were immediately like, not for us, and just ran.
Yeah, it's not for me either. But when I first came out here, everybody wanted to go out. Yeah. You know, so I would go out every freaking day, all the time. But so I'm pretty low key these days. I'm not, you know, I actually still enjoy magic. I like to read a bunch of stuff that never is going to wind up in my show. Because I'm like, that just won't fit, and I love it. Like, I love mentalism, but there's so many things that it would be drawn out and long for the crowd, you know? So how boring, right? That's what I like. But, I mean, there's other things I like I can't talk about, but, you know.
So the tagline for this podcast is the podcast that hopes to make itself obsolete. And that has rung true because the idea is that in a world of true gender equality, a podcast like this would be unnecessary. And we would love to go back to just doing shows. What do you
Clever.
Think from your perspective?
I like it.
Everything with Shazam was sort of accidentally awesome.
Yeah.
what do you think would have to happen for a podcast like this to be obsolete? In other words, for true gender equality to be achieved.
Think about it this way. Racism still exists, and they passed the laws in like the 60s, 1967. This is 50 years later, and you know, sometimes you feel like we're still kind of, it's not as bad as what it was, but we see more because of the fact that there's cell phones and it's more prevalent. So we're still trying. I think there's another 50 years to get that right. I think it's going to take a while, but we do need to find a better way to get along, don't you think? I mean, I think, first of all, here's what I think is interesting. We're entertainers, so we know as entertainers, we know parts of us are dorks, you know, parts of us are a little odd. I mean, we've been an outcast at some point. At some point, we were doing a trick, you know, where, hey, want to see a card trick? No. hate card tricks. So we know what it's, as an entertainer, we know that feeling of being left out. I mean, everyone thinks it's all glamorous, but there's plenty of times people don't want to see it. You did street performing. You know what it's like. No, thank you. And you know what it's like at college. You just don't know. I mean, it's just, so I think that we can bond with a lot of more people than most people because we're in, you know, it's a weird little thing we do. But I think it takes more time. I think the next generation is going to be in a better place than we are, though, because they're growing up with more diversity now. And, you know, kids are, and they defend each other. And I think it's, you know, I think it's, we're this middle generation where it's a little screwed up right now. You know, I think your podcast is always going to be there, though, because you know why? Because there's always, I know, look at you, oh no. You're always going to have something to speak up for. Don't you feel like that? I mean, don't you feel, I mean, you talk about gender equality, but there's always going to be some inequalities because everyone's going to view things differently. And honestly, people hate when I say this, but things aren't always equal because some people excel in certain things that others don't. I mean, it's hard to make something equal. I think opportunities need to be equal for everybody. But, I mean, I don't think you're always going to find that fine balance between equality. I mean, even look at our own peers. There are some people that are better with certain things than we are and vice versa. We can't say they don't belong because we're not as good as them, you know? You can strive to be better at something, but I don't think you're always going to find something being equal. But I think we could treat people right. I think that's what it all comes down to, you know? It's really funny. I'll pick on anyone during my show equally, you know? But afterward, I'm very nice. I have fun with the people. I think they know I'm kidding. You're the most hilarious, though, Chris. You're the worst. So, and I laugh, yeah.
That's the perfect thing to say to someone when they finish a show. You're the worst.
Yeah, I loved it. Perfect. I loved it. And I'm watching Kayla's face. I'm like, what do you think? Yeah. No, I agree with her. But
yep.
I hope that wasn't a long-winded answer, but it was a little
bit. Max Maven.
Yep.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking of the color red. The color.
He's gonna be so mad at you.
He's great. Max Maven, actually, if you could find his book, what's that, The Five Colors of Magic? Do you know those books? Oh my god, they're hard to find though now. He's written some amazing material. That guy is brilliant. Prism.
Oh yeah,
that guy is Prism is great. And anything Eugene Berger did, I remember a book on close-up magic he had, the restaurant magic, you know, close-up worker, and anything you could find from Eugene. That guy was a brilliant writer. He had such great tips on entertainment, performing. You know, it's funny, all these things I know and all these things were become part of my show, but you'd never see it. It's so well hidden in there. Like, you wouldn't. Eugene Berger, the biggest thing I ever learned from him, and I learned it from a book, was the use of someone's name was power. He said, any people love to hear their name. It's such power. And I picked it up when I was doing close-up magic, and I've applied it towards my stage show, and it works. If you can use someone's name, and you don't have to remember all their names, just when you're talking to them, mm-hmm. You know, the best tip for that is repeat their name. And most people don't repeat it. They go, hey, what's your name? Oh, Dave, good. And, you know, and someone, and you start talking, and you're like, wait, what was his name? So I always repeat their name. Hey, Dave. But I'm also repeating it so the audience can hear it as well. But name is power, and I always remembered that from him, and he was so brilliant. He's just such a smart guy, you know, and Max Maven. I mean, they were so close to those guys. So, you know, yeah, that. Jeff McBride's actually brilliant too, that guy. God, there's so many. Just, you know. Go on.
No, we're letting, this is your section.
Cut!
No. Good lightning.
I wanted to talk about the alligators, but
yeah, we just never bring it up.
For a guy that's so good at improvising, that was the boy, glad that didn't happen in my show. Hey, what's your favorite alligator? What? What the hell are you talking about?
Well, that was a fun bit. Last question. Is there a woman you want to shout out for being awesome in the who's an entertainer?
Who's an entertainer?
Yeah, magician, comedian.
Magic, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I hate women, but if I have to think of one, you know what I actually do? And this is, I think Simone Marin, you know Simone, of course. I think she's awesome for magic. And the reason is that lady works so freaking hard. She really tries to do just, you know, she's with the IBM, but she's the secretary with IBM, but she almost acts like she's the president. I mean, she really does try to highlight magicians in a really good way. I think she does such a great job trying to write about entertainers and write about magic. And I think she's just awesome for magic. I think she's done so many amazing things. And she's very well researched, too. Because, you know, we're a cliquish little group of people. And we got these little, we're fickle, I should say. And she, you know, she'll step her, you know, she'll put her 2 cents into things and straighten people out. But I think she's been great for magic. And I know it's not a woman, and I don't, you know, but I think Penn and Teller are also doing some great things for the world of magic, for magicians. I think they're given such opportunity. And we were talking about the way they've included women in their show. And yes, I know it took a little while to get there, but I think that's amazing too. You know, I think that's something that's really, I think that's really good that I like to see it, you know, and they're picky. They're not going to put women that aren't good out there. You know what I mean? So, but I think that that's an interesting, you know, I think that that's a good thing. Comedian women, though, you know, I used to like, I still do, but Lisa Lampanelli is so funny. But of course, I like her. Look at the person, the way she.
Yeah.
She's like a guy in her material.
Deborah DiGiovanni is also kind of in that.
Like, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Kind of style.
Yeah. Lisa is just so great.
Have you seen much of Hannah Gadsby?
No, I haven't. Good?
Really very brilliant. Very good. Really brilliant. Her new Netflix special has been so huge.
Oh, maybe I'll check it out. There's another Netflix special by a woman that just came out. No, I'm trying
Ellen's.
To...
Ellen's.
Okay. This is... I gotta bring it up. We're never gonna end this freaking thing. So Ellen comes out with her Netflix special. Now, I don't really watch her talk show. Nothing against her. I just don't really watch much talk shows. But I remember Ellen's stand-up from years ago. And I always thought it was so brilliant. The way she would talk about... I remember she would talk... She had a routine about a housefly. And she goes, why are we trying to kill a housefly? Like, we named it, you know? Housefly, it's supposed to be there. And she would talk about that. And so she always had such brilliant analogies, and she was so funny. So her Netflix special comes out, and I'm like, let me watch it. And I'm like, I don't know how political it's going to be or whatever it is. It was brilliant. It is. I remember posting about how brilliant it was, and I remember, you know, I know some guys that are like, yeah, blah, 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 it's going to be politics. I'm like, no, it is, but it fits her. It was so brilliant because she talks about, she's basically so rich, but she's trying to say, you know, but I'm just like everybody else, and I'm talking to my butler about, you know, and she's doing all these things, and she goes, I mean, I'm in the tub, and they're coming to feed me, but anyway, and it is such a brilliant special, and she's so true to her character, you know, she does have one, and yet she never really forgot where she came from. When you watch it, you're like, God, it's so brilliant, but she, you know, she's still Ellen. And it's just so amazing. And I remember she was talking about, she went back and talked about when she first came out, and she told people she's a lesbian. It was really hard for her, she said, because she actually lost her TV show at the time. And, you know, and she came up with another show, and they're like, you know, she's talking about how the network said, this isn't really good for your time slot. Like, your humor, it really won't work for this type of thing. And she goes, oh, well, what time would be good for lesbians? Like, what's the time slot that would work? And she's so brilliant, though. She is so brilliant. I got to put Ellen up there. I actually had to go and watch it again and then again, because you pick up little nuances of brilliance, and you're like, And those things you can apply for your own style or types of, you know, jokes. And she's great. And that's why I say you've got to watch everything. And if you don't do comedy, watch what fits you. But you've got to watch things, you know. She's great. She's great. Good call, alligator woman.
Thank you.
I just got, you know, busted on the alligator. It's hard to answer questions when someone's wearing lingerie these days.
Yeah, well, that's what we try to throw people off. You're the only one that it worked.
Yeah. It is made of... Our lingerie is made of alligator skin, yeah, so I mean, I don't know why we're
not. Ooh, don't tell Maria that.
She'll be so mad at us.
Yeah.
I mean, she gave it to us.
what a way to end it.
Oh, boy. Jeff, you got some work on your hands.
Yeah.
Poor Jeff.
I'm sorry, that was the weirdest end, right? I just went on and on.
No, it was only weird for me because I was like, what about the alligator skin? I'm also vegan. Like, that's,
Oh, yeah. Are you vegan?
Yeah, like, loosely. Obviously, when traveling, it's
I don't really eat meat anymore. I eat fish, which I'll just die of mercury poisoning. The more you talk about it, it's like, the more fish is bad. Everything's bad for you.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just eat people. This seems to be fine.
Yeah, people are fine.
Just evil people. Like, they call you
the cannibal. Yeah.
The cannibal of magic. Vote for me at the AMA Awards. The cannibal of magic.
Out now.
Anyway, thank you so much for joining us. We really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And if you do get to Vegas and you want to see an expert work a room,
Matt King is playing every afternoon. Beat me to it, bitch.
Well done.
That's
our fun.
Stepped on the bit. Okay, great. So thank
all
you.
All three of us had the. I know. We said the same bit with a different magician.
Yeah, I even said a different show. So how weird is that?
Well done, everyone.
So but you could still see Mike Hammer if that's where she was going for. But if you want to see a second show.
What?
Me.
Amazing. Yes. So thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate
thanks, you guys.
Your expertise. Thanks. And thanks for joining us on this very special episode of Shazam. And remember,
alligators are friends, not food.
And not lingerie. Bye, guys.
This podcast is funded in part through support from the Endowment and Development Fund of the International Brotherhood of Magicians. Thank you so much for helping us out, you guys. We really appreciate it.